And this evening, we are extremely pleased to hold this event to bring the truth forward. Specifically, this evening is devoted to the press, and there are a number of you here. And I do want to thank all of the people who have attended from who are non-press, the people who are interested in this concept and this whole idea. And we do thank you for your support. The main purpose of this evening is to speak to the press. And we're doing that because it's really the only way to get the information out. I spent about 30 years as an elementary school principal here in the city of Toronto. And at that time, I was responsible for any one time between 300 to 900 children and a community of several thousand. And I never ever said to any one of those parents or children that I can guarantee anything. But tonight I guarantee you, and I can say that I will guarantee you that this evening and the information that you're about to hear will be the most staggering information you've ever heard in your life. And I mean that sincerely, and I'm speaking specifically to the press right now. And I know many of you are involved in the day-to-day issues, be it how we dispose of our waste, or guns in Toronto, or the war in Iraq. The bold statement that I have to make to you is every single issue, doesn't matter what it is, pales in comparison to what you're about to hear tonight. The information you hear tonight has the capacity to change the world, not just now, but forever. And if you have the acuity to follow the information over the long term, not just covering a story for this evening, for tomorrow's news, or a story down the road in a magazine or a newspaper, that's great, that's a super effort, but we need sustained components. We talked about to engage the media in a constant, sustained, comprehensive dialogue, and I'll get into that in a minute, about this issue. That we are being visited by extraterrestrial life forms. They've been around for a long, long time. And a famous Canadian writer said at one time in a book called The Developing Canadian Community, he said, you cannot describe all situations that are going on all at once. It's physically impossible. We don't have that capacity as human beings to capture everything that's going on all at once, or to speak about everything that's going on at once. And that's the difficulty. There is so much going on in this issue, it's overwhelming. It's like trying to read an encyclopedia to a 9-month-old child. There is no way that they can consume it. So tonight we hope to give you just a little bit of a taste of what's going on. And the only analogy that I can give you right now is, how long is a piece of string? You just don't know how long it is. So right now, we're just going to give you a little snippet of that string. And we're hoping that you will take this story back to your editors, back to the people that you report to get information out. And based on what you hear this evening, and I know it will be incredible, I know it will be mind-boggling, but you have to consider it as the truth. So I've been involved in this issue for over 25 years, and you're going to hear from two individuals who've been involved that long and even more. So I think it's incumbent upon the press and the media to look at this issue with a sustained acuity, a sustained intellectual acuity. This is not something of ridicule, and I'm dead serious here. This is not something that's, oh well, little green man. It is extremely serious. The life of the planet is at stake here. And if we do not pick up on all of the intricacies of it, we will be wasting the planet. We have a responsibility to take this forward and to engage yourselves, engage the media in this whole issue. I know those are strong statements, but it's been far, far too long that this issue has sat on the back shelf. The carousel of issues revolves around on a day-to-day basis. Listen to one newscast, and it will capture for you the essence of the issues that we are totally consumed by and occupied and preoccupied by on a daily basis. This issue that has the capacity to change the world is ignored and ridiculed. And it's up to the press to look at the information, study and examine it in a sane, comprehensive way so that we can bring it forward. And that's the essence of this evening. I'm hoping that that message comes through loud and clear. So without belaboring that point, what I do want to do is introduce Michael Bird, the Director of Exopolitics Toronto, and have him come forward to say a few words.
Thank you, Victor. Victor's a much better speaker than I. Please bear with me. The first time I heard the word exopolitics was in the fall of 2003. Stephen Bassett was planning and promoting X Conference 1, the first annual Exopolitics Expo held in Washington, D.C. in April 2004. Victor and I attended that conference along with a handful of others from Toronto and Southern Ontario. Stephen Greer was one of the speakers. Wikipedia, the free web encyclopedia, has the following to say about the word. At present, a definition for exopolitics is not listed in any standard dictionary, but listings have been created in Wikipedia and the Merriam-Webster Open Dictionary. It offers the following as a definition. Exopolitics is the emerging field of study of the implications of possible contact between human and extraterrestrial civilizations. Critical questions include what, if any, political framework might be established between human beings and extraterrestrials, and the process by which world governments would inform their citizens of an extraterrestrial presence should one be identified. And also a brief history of the word. The use of the term exopolitics in a formulated approach began with the work of Alfred Labermont Weber in 2000. With the publishing of his book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. The field was further expanded by Dr. Michael Sala with the publishing of Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence in 2004. In April 2004 and 2005, the first two conferences centered on exopolitical issues were held near Washington, D.C., titled the X Conferences 1 and 2. They were the productions of Paradigm Research Group, Stephen Bassett. In 2005, former Canadian Minister of National Defense and Deputy Prime Minister, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, publicly disclosed his belief in an extraterrestrial presence, including a crashed extraterrestrial vehicle near Roswell, New Mexico, in July of 47, at an exopolitics symposium in Toronto on September 25, 2005. Tonight, Exopolitics Toronto again, with the help of the Honorable Paul Hellyer, and for the first time, Dr. Stephen Greer, are providing an exopolitical update. Not to take away from the presentations by Stephen Bassett, Richard Dole, and Stanton Friedman last September, Paul's participation was enormous. When he got up on stage in front of 400 people and TV Ontario and Discovery Channel film crews at Convocation Hall and said, UFOs are as real as the airplanes that fly over our head. He wittingly or unwittingly scored not a home run, but a grand slam for truth. His courage and message continues to circle the world. Paul Harris, who couldn't make the trip to Toronto because of illness, has made Paul an icon in Italy. Next month, Paul will be the keynote speaker at the ET Civilization and World Peace Conference on Hawaii, organized by Michael Sala. I will be attending the conference to be part of the Canadian cheering squad for Paul. One of the things I've always wanted to do was swim with dolphins in the wild. And I'm happy to report that I've already booked a swim with Joan Ocean and the dolphins before I leave Hawaii. And here lies my dilemma. Less than 2 weeks ago, approximately 400 bottleneck nook dolphins washed ashore on the coast of Sandra Park. No one knows what caused their deaths. Many people suspect the HARP program, where the depths of the oceans are being bombarded by high-frequency noise. If while I'm swimming with the dolphins, what if I sense that they are in pain? What if I hear their cries? What am I supposed to tell them? That our human species have become so self-enamored with material things that the rights of other species that share this planet do not matter? Some days I think we humans are nothing but frauds, We look like we are the stewards of this planet, but in actual reality, we have not earned the right to be stewards. I think nothing short of a planetary attitude adjustment is required for us to get off the destructive path that we are on. I feel that disclosure is a just-in-time word and will save us from ourselves. I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't know what the future holds in store for us, but my hope is that our governments, with our help, will realize that continued lying damages us all. It undermines our true potential and our place in the universe. There is no reason to withhold the truth anymore. It is just around the corner, waiting to be born. I think most of us know that. We can articulate it, and anyway, I think that's all I wanted to say. I'll pass back to Victor Vigian.
Thank you, Michael. Just before we get to the witness testimony, which will probably be the meat and potatoes of the evening, I'd like to let you know that the disclosure DVD that we have will be on sale at the end of the evening. Please, we'll be able to see Michael, certainly David Shishchak, over here to my left, and he will be at the back table to sell that to you if you wish. But it is a two-hour-long DVD that has most of the witness testimony that's of relevance. And in talking with Dr. Greer, we're up to well over that, multiple numbers of witnesses. You just can't get it all in one DVD. We are only going to look this evening, because of time, at maybe three or four. I've got it set up on the computer that we can listen to. I would guess, depending on how things go, three to four, possibly six of the witnesses, depending on how much time it takes. But I do want you to hear the statements by Dr. Greer and by Paul Hellyer, and then to engage in a question and answer following them. So that's where we're going to go now. Let's do a very brief introduction of where we're going for the evening, and we'll take it over from there with the DVD in a moment. What I'd like to do is I'm going to take this thing off so I don't ruin anybody's ears. What I'd like to do is just run through something very, very quickly with you, just to give you sort of an overview. And I want to let you know that there is just so much information, as I said earlier, there's no way that we can encapsulate it this evening. I know Paul will try, I know Stephen will try. There's a very important meeting that happened this morning in Mr. Hellyer's office among the three of us, and the information amount was just overwhelming. Coming from the exchange that Paul and Stephen had this afternoon. So if you've heard this before, bear with me. If you haven't heard it before, particularly the press, get the pencils going, because you won't hear anything like this again unless we have something like this in the future. This is a one-time shot. So basically, we're here to talk about that. These are the briefings and updates, as Michael said. We are involved in what we call the Canadian Disclosure Initiative, and that is sort of made up of three groups here in Toronto, myself and Michael, and our organization, Anthropologics Toronto, and the Disclosure Project, with the director, Dr. Stephen M. Greer from Virginia, and also the Institute for Cooperation in Space. The director is Alfred Weber. And the three of us have collaborated to develop the idea behind a Canadian Disclosure Initiative to work with the press, to work with the government, hopefully moving towards some sort of engagement or dialogue, or to make it okay to talk about this stuff. To make it okay to talk about it. Right now, it's not okay. I spoke with the news director at one of the local radio stations about 3 months ago, and he laughed. He just laughed when I brought this up. We don't have time for that. That's the mentality that is out there. We need to change that today. And that's why we're here. So, these three organizations, NGOs, if you want to call them that, but we're working hard to make sure this information gets out and we begin to engage the press. Looking at the whole thing, what are we talking about? And this, once again, these aren't the only issues, the multiplicity of issues here. First of all, we're looking at the reality of an extraterrestrial presence. Fact. Take it to the bank. Number two, the authenticity and seriousness of the geopolitical policy implications, and we'll get into that this evening, okay, of the unidentified aerial phenomenon and of the non-Earth civilizations that are visiting us. There are incredible geopolitical implications. I'm not getting into them right now. I know the other speakers will be soon, as you will hear on the DVD also. And also, I love to cover up. It's 58 years old. I'm 58 years old. Okay? Maybe going on longer, I'm not sure, but that's how long the government has been hiding this from us. And as a matter of fact, when this first started, they were just as confused as you and I are right now about this. They didn't know what to do. They were just as frightened as anything. When I think about the implications, they still don't know what to do. I'm talking about military and government. I'm not talking about big corporations. They know exactly what's going on, and we'll get into that later. Our mission, basically, to engage mainstream media. That's what we're here for. A long-term, sustained examination and comprehensive investigation of multiple, what I call, converging lines of evidence. You look at all the information, and there's so many lines of evidence. In a court of law, that's the way they develop things. They develop converging lines of evidence so the jury can come up with only one conclusion, guilty or not guilty. If you take this information to the bank or to a court of law, those converging lines of evidence, you look at all the evidence, not just one string. If you look at all of the evidence, you'll come up with the undisputable conclusion that there's an extraterrestrial presence. And that the thing called unidentified objects or unidentified aerial phenomena are in fact true. Okay? Where they come from? Who makes them? Are they ours? Are they theirs? Those are questions that we need to broach in the discourse. We can't provide all the answers right now. Okay? The major goals of what we're trying to do is, in the long term, engage the government. Huge task. Insurmountable, like pushing a boulder up a mountain. To establish a formal disclosure process by the government and its agencies regarding the unidentified aerial phenomenon. And I'll get into this in a second. Because this is not a confrontational thing. We do not want to begin accusing our government. Because most elected officials have no idea what's going on anyways. It's the people in the back rooms or underground. Long-term objectives? To create a partnership with government. And we are moving towards that. And media, educational institutions, private industries, social institutions, facilitate a positive disclosure that engenders cooperation and a gradual transition concerning the knowledge that we are being visited by awful civilizations. You see where we're going with this? We need to engage the public, everyone. And that's the role of the media. We can't do it. You guys have to get this information out. The peaceful use of space. Right now, it is a foregone conclusion in many people's minds that space-based weapons are there. They have the capacity to do just about anything you want. And if you look at all the information again, there are weapons out there that you cannot imagine. I'm hoping Dr. Greer might be able to broach that issue with us this evening. Transition to fossil fuels to new forms of energy. That's it in a nutshell, folks. And if the press wants to ask a question about that later on, please, that's the hitch right there. We're driving around in our cars, we're burning gas, diesel fuel, and there are extraterrestrial civilizations, awful civilizations, who have energy forms that we have no idea about, that can move at or beyond, way beyond light speed. Okay? You say, well, he's making that up. No, I'm not. Another thing, you can take the bank. I don't mean to be overly aggressive here, but I'm a teacher by profession. And when I challenge my learners, and I'm considering everyone in this audience right now a learner, and actually there's one person in the audience right now who was a learner of mine as a student teacher, and she knows how hard I can push. All my students. And I take it, it's one thing, everybody does things really, really well. It's the one thing I know in my life that I can do really, really well. So I'm trying to be instructive here and challenge you as learners. I call it brushing it for the other way. In other words, if I don't accept you this evening, I'm not doing my job. If I don't challenge you this evening, I'm not doing my job as a teacher. So that's why I'm putting this effort into not convincing, but showing you to look in this direction. Only some of the evidence. And these are some of the standard things that people think about when they think of UFOs. But it's part of the convergent line of evidence. It's not the major part, but it's part of it. Worldwide sightings are on the rise. They're going up every day. Just in Canada alone, 769 reports. These are just reports from RCMP officers. I have a file in my briefcase of 117 pages from the Ministry of Defense of reports by citizens, police officers, RCMP officers, and NORAD jets scrambling to chase these things. NORAD jets, not just once or twice, they do it on a regular basis. There is. I read my mind. All those who are involved in psychability, raise my hand. You get it? Okay. UFO sightings in Canada increased over the past 16 years. These are just little tidbits of information. They're relatively meaningless in the long term, but if there's a novitiate out there who are uninformed, these are interesting facts. But this is something that I was involved in 20 years ago. I'm no longer interested in seeking out lights in the sky. This is a geopolitical issue for me. And we want to deal with tonight's main issue. We have testimony by ranking military officers, pilots, ICBM launch commanders, air traffic controllers, corporate executives, and FAA accident investigation. A senior, I think he's one of the top three, if I'm not mistaken.
He was the head of it.
He was the head of the accident investigation unit for the Federal Aviation, whatever the other pay is for. And also, statements by Paul and by Stephen this evening. So that's basically it. And what I'd like to do now is take a run at, if you can just give me a second here to actually we do the DVD. Yes, let's do the DVD now. Can we do that now? Those of you, once again, in the press, you've now been empowered with a little bit of information. And that sense of empowerment, I think, is changed now from when you first walked in the door. And I'm hoping that when you do, take the stuff back to your editors. Okay? You've only heard, one half of this evening's presentation about, we're going to talk about now, the implications that Brigadier General Stephen Lufkin alluded to with corporations and how President Eisenhower was sold out. So now we have a body of information, and now we're going to proceed to try to come to grips with what the geopolitical implications are of this, and which is even more staggering. So what I'm going to do now is introduce someone that I feel very, very strongly about, and he came forward last September 25th, and he's not a ufologist, he's not someone who has seeked in this information, he's someone who has served our country in the bravest of ways by coming forward and using his name and his integrity. And believe me, when you get into this field, your integrity is at stake. Make no mistake about that. Criticism comes from all sections. So I wanted to introduce to you the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who, as you probably know, served as the Minister of National Defense under the Lester B. Pearson government here in Canada. And last September, he said, as Michael alluded to, that UFOs are as real as the planes that fly over our head. And those words will resonate in Canadian society, as far as I'm concerned, until this issue comes to the forefront. And once again, I don't want to harp on it, but the media, I challenge you to engage this issue in the most stringent of ways. And don't let anyone tell you that this stuff is bogus, because it is information that is profound. And then we have a man here, Paul Hillier, who's willing to stand up and be counted and say, people, please listen. So, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Hillier.
Thank you, Victor. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming out tonight and learning more about what I consider to be one of the most important subjects facing the future of the world in the present time. Victor said last September, I went public as someone who believes that UFOs are real. I didn't do that on a whim. I was totally convinced. I read a book, which I would commend to any of you who are interested in the subject, written by Colonel Philip J. Corso, retired United States Army intelligence officer, who actually saw one of the cadavers and who was involved in feeding some of the wreckage from the Roswell crash into United States industry to be reverse engineered for the benefit of the United States military forces, the Army in particular, which was the force that he was working for, and also, as it turned out, for some of us. In his book, he makes it clear that some of the ideas were not new ideas, but what happened was that with the help of the technology from the wreckage at Roswell, United States industry was able to speed up the development of a whole range of products, to speed it up immeasurably by years, and in some cases maybe even decades. And so this was something that really influenced me, and I told this story in September, I'll repeat it again. I just happened to take this book with me when I was going on holiday last summer, and I was reading it. My nephew, Phil, came along, asked me what I was reading. I told him, gave him a little bit of the information from the book, and he said, well, I'm very skeptical, and walked away. 2 days later, he phoned me and said, I just talked to my friend, he's a retired general in the United States Air Force, and I mentioned the book to him, and he said, every word is true and more. Well, that was good to hear when I had already made up my mind that this was authentic stuff. I went through my mind and said, is it possible that someone could fabricate this story? Is it possible that it could be like the life of Pi and that someone just has such a wonderful imagination that they could put together all this stuff? I came to the conclusion that the answer was no. There were too many dates, too many real people that I knew about, and too many facts that were impossible to refute. So, before I went public in September, I phoned Philip and asked him if he would give me the general's number, because I had met him at a air show a couple of years earlier. And phoned. So I did, and I, hello, General, it's good to talk to you, and I think Phil told you why I'm calling. It's about Corso's book. And he just repeated every word of it's true and more. So then for 20 minutes, he proceeded to talk about the more. And there were some things he couldn't talk about, but even what he did talk about was as fascinating as anything I'd heard in a long time, perhaps until today with spending 2 or 3 hours with Dr. Stephen Greer. In any event, it wasn't the fact that there are UFOs, which I am absolutely, totally convinced there are, that made me go public. As I said at the time, it is the policy implications. I'm a policy wonk. I'm concerned about the future of our society. I'm concerned about the future of our planet. And I'm concerned about governments that claim to be democratic and where somebody other than the elected officials are running the show. And that seems to... Well, that's one of my major concerns. But they're all tremendous concerns. I don't know how many of you have heard of Lewis Lapham's, the editor of Harper's Magazine's theory that the United States has two governments. The permanent and the provisional. The permanent government consists of the Fortune 500, the big legal firms in Washington that do their legal work, and the big public relations firms in Washington that do their public relations, and the top civil servants, both civil and military. And they run the United States. And every once in a while, here I paraphrase a little bit, they have a charade called an election. And the permanent government picks the actors to go on the stage. And once they pick them, they finance them and nobody else need apply. Because getting elected is so expensive that you need a tremendous amount of money, and they put up the money to get their men elected. And they try to pick actors that won't improvise too much. They will read the scripts the way they're written. And then they don't always tell them everything. Something I'm finding out as I'm digging deeper and deeper into this is that there are at least two presidents of the United States who are not fully briefed on the subject we're talking about tonight. And you might say, you've got to be kidding. But I'm not kidding. This is so tightly held that even chiefs of intelligence and presidents of the United States have not been fully apprised as to what's going on and why. So there's the issue of governance, of whether it's democracy, plutocracy, who's running the United States, who's running the world. Well, often, and I know this from experience, it's not the people you elect and hold accountable. It's a lot of people who are unelected and not held accountable. And then the second major issue is the question of saving the planet literally. We've been talking about the Kyoto Agreement. Our government has shown a lack of enthusiasm for it. We can see the polar ice caps melting. There's evidence all around us that we're in danger if we don't do something. And it's just a question of time. It isn't a question of if, it's only a question of when. And what we have to answer is, do we care? We will probably live out our natural lives. Why aren't they revealing it and working on saving the planet now? Well, the answer, I think you probably know, is because there are a lot of people with trillions of dollars invested in oil fields that don't really want this information out for quite a long while until the oil fields are depleted and they've got their money out three or four times over. Now that's maybe speculation, but you don't have to be a wizard to know what would happen if the information came out and we had to adapt. We could adapt, but it would cause a very great disruption. And a lot of people would lose a lot of money. And I know a lot of people that don't like losing a lot of money, especially if they've got a lot of power and can avoid it. So this is, I think, the second major issue. Well, and the third one, which I think is equally important, is that as Minister of National Defense, I sort of understand to a certain extent the military mind. Most of them are wonderful people, and I say that without any reservation. And Canadian soldiers, sailors, and airmen are as good as around the world, and we can be very proud of them. And they do a fantastic job, even though we don't support them properly, with the personnel and the equipment that they deserve. But there are some people in this clique which involves some military people, but not all. Because as Dr. Beer will tell you later, and I hope you'll ask him this question, he has talked to senior people in the United States military that haven't a clue what's going on. even though you would say, you're kidding. And he will say, no, I'm not kidding. People who should have known what was going on, not told, and told they had no right to know. Why? I think because, as General Eisenhower probably saw ahead, there are people who have a vested interest in the arms industry and want to keep building and building, and if they don't have an enemy, they create another one. So first you have the Cold War, and then you have a phony war against terrorism, and then when that runs out, you're going to be faced with this extraterrestrial threat, and we, the people of the world, are going to have to get together and squander all of our money to build defenses to try and protect ourselves against the ETs. Even though they've probably been here for 2,000 years and haven't done us any great harm in all that time. Well, this is tremendously important. And, you know, in Colonel Korzel's book, he talks about Star Wars years ago. What was the purpose? Primarily to prepare a defense against the ETs. And was a lot of the reverse engineering and new engineering and some of these sophisticated weapon systems being developed to prepare weapons to shoot them down. And if we start shooting them down, when they're probably still decades or centuries ahead of us in technology, that they're going to like it. And if they don't like it, what are they going to do about it? And I don't want to know the answer to that question. Because I don't want us to take them on for size. I want, as a lot of members of the Exit Politics Institute want, is to try and make contact and say, what can we learn from you that will help us save our planet, save our civilization, reduce some of the disparity between the wealthiest people of the world and the poorest, and give us a more abundant life for everyone here? Because that is possible. So we're not talking about small states here. We're not talking, you know, about some politician that was caught spending the weekend with a blonde that wasn't his wife, or some major story that would get all the newspapers and get 2 or 3 pages and follow-up stories. Some people think those are the important stories. I haven't been involved in one so far. And they're maybe interesting, you know, a little titillation, that kind of thing. But in the long run, they don't matter who. But who's running the world matters. Whether we save the world or not matters. And whether we get into an intergalactic war matters, because all of us are inevitably going to be affected directly or indirectly in some way that we would really not want to see. So that's basically the reason I'm here. Dr. Breer is the expert. I'll leave the technical questions to him, because I've never talked to anyone who has known as much about all of these things as he does. He blew my mind for 2.5 hours today, and I know that he won't talk about all the things because he won't have time. But I think he will answer your questions about anything you want to know about the U.S. military, who knows, what they know, why the right people don't know, and why we're not getting the information that we deserve to have. So I just hope you'll give him a very warm reception, and I just say thank God for Dr. Greer and people like him, but especially Dr. Greer for his disclosure project. You get one of his DVDs and watch it through about twice. You'll want to go up and march on Parliament Hill and say, look, start an inquiry, find out what this is all about. Lots of witnesses that he could bring up that would talk openly about the problems. And get it all out in the open before it's too late, because that's what we really want, that's what it's all about. Thank you.
I say more? Okay, what I'm going to do now is just ask a Canadian representative from the Disclosure Project, David Shishchuk, to come forward to introduce Dr. Dricker.
Thanks, Victor. My name is David Shishchuk, and I've been involved with the Disclosure Project in a pretty small way in Toronto for the last 4 years. And I'll go back into my background a little bit more later, but as we've seen tonight, it's really about questions. That's where I start coming from. And questions have sort of been hanging over the world for at least the last 60 years, probably much longer than that, but certainly that long. And just to go over those questions, it's three of them, and again, we have, why are we still using obsolete and polluting energy generation and transportation technology when effective alternatives are known and have been demonstrated? Why is that the case? Why and how does a small group of people control and manipulate the economy, energy, politics, technological development, medicine, and media, and a whole lot of other fields? Why is this going on continuously? And why are we putting up with it? And why is the enormous evidence for extraterrestrial civilizations, why is it being held secret or outright denied? And there's one other question. Why is it when you ask these questions too often or too loudly, things start happening to you? You can be ridiculed, shunned, harassed, offered bribes, co-opted, threatened, and have a tense on your life and on those people close to you. Stephen Greer has looked all of that in the face for years, and he's not doing it. He put a highly successful and honored career on hold to do this. That career was as an emergency physician and chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Caldwell Memorial Hospital in North Carolina. He's also a lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, which is the most prestigious medical honor society in the United States. Now, he walked away from that to essentially take on the volunteer position as head of the Disclosure Project, Space Energy Access Systems Incorporated, and CSIP. And thrown in on the deal, he gets to watch his back pretty much on an ongoing basis. Now, how many of us sitting in this room would pick up a cause like that and pay such a price? Not many, if any of us. Now, some of the things Stephen will say and some of the evidence he presents will seem to be pretty much out there. And I wouldn't blame anyone for being skeptical. My own background is in research methods and statistics, which I taught at the University of Toronto for 13 years. Now, skepticism is something I basically made a living by. If something doesn't add up, it doesn't even make it to the Navy file, as far as I'm concerned. But I decided, after becoming acquainted with what Stephen was doing, to look into things personally. And after a remarkably short amount of time, I was able to personally verify, firsthand, for myself, some of the claims and things that Stephen Greer said. And at first, those claims seemed utterly incredible. But believe me, when you personally verify something, and you get lots of independent confirmation from sources, very different sources, it starts to lend a lot of credibility to everything else he has to say. Now, if Stephen Greer says to you that he had a meeting with a certain public official, and that certain things were discussed, or that certain events took place that aren't commonly known or discussed, you can be sure that it happened. Now, that doesn't mean you have to agree 100% with every conclusion he comes to. Certainly, I don't see eye to eye on every last bit of detail of his perspective, but that is neither here nor there. We need to be asking the questions and looking at the evidence that he and the Disclosure Project witnesses have brought to the table at great personal cost and risk. That evidence and those questions need to be part of everyday public discourse and political debate. The future of humanity demands on that debate at least taking place and then action being taken upon it. I suggest you take this opportunity to listen very closely to what he has to say. Please welcome Stephen Greer.
And Victor, it's an honor to be here, be back in Toronto, and to address you and members of the media. This is the fifth year anniversary of the National Press Club, where the first of these top secret witnesses stepped forward with the whole world watching. They were allowed to watch briefly before the intelligence people pulled it off the airwaves. I will give you an idea of how well-wrapped this whole thing is. The National Press Club, 5 years ago today, with 22 of these military and intelligence witnesses in front of the world's cameras, and it being live webcast on the internet, it was the most watched internet broadcast at that time in the history of the internet. The broadcasting entity is the entity that hosts CNN and the Department of Defense at the National Press Club. They said there were so many people trying to see it, it crashed their bandwidth. They used up all their bandwidth. But then, the first hour of it was externally, electronically jammed, probably from the National Security Agency of the United States. It took 1 hour after the beginning of it for them to get loaded on so that you, the people, could see it. They don't want you to know the truth. And I'm going to share with you the truth that we know. I began this effort in 1990, actually. We have now nearly 500 of these military and intelligence and corporate witnesses. Some of these witnesses are from corporations such as Lockheed, Northrop, SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, E-Systems, Raytheon, and others. These corporations are sitting on the definitive solution to a good many of the world's most pressing problems, up to and including the need to replace the fossil fuel, meaning oil, gas, coal, nuclear power systems, with sustainable energy and propulsion systems, which a kleptocracy have robbed from you and from us for the last 50 years. It's time that we say no to that, and it's time for the disclosure of the truth. On December 13, 1993, I was in the unenviable, dreadful position of having been asked by the Director of Central Intelligence of the United States, who had just been appointed by President Clinton, to brief him and the Clinton administration on this problem. My uncle was the senior project engineer who designed the lunar module that landed on the moon. And I'm just a country doctor from North Carolina, actually. But I had an interest in this since childhood, and I began to study this very intensely beginning again in 1990. By 1993, we had identified several dozen of these military witnesses. We had identified nearly 4,000 cases where these objects had landed on terra firma and left physical evidence. We had identified over 3,000 military and civilian professional airline pilots who had encountered them with radar confirmation in many of those cases. We had several thousand pages of official, not hoax, officially released government documents that we had acquired from the United States, Canada, one of the most important documents is from Canada from 1951, and from the KGB files, which were translated for us. The memo I got from the point of contact to the Director of Central Intelligence said, "Dr. Greer, the President and the CIA director have made directed inquiries into this matter and have been denied access." This I thought to be a bold-faced lie, frankly. I said, this must be a prevarication. But I said, I'll come and brief him anyway, because I'm on no secret project, and I'll just share what I know. So under the cover of a dinner party in Washington, outside Washington, Arlington, I was invited with my wife, and the CIA director and his wife, who was the chief operating officer of the National Academy of Sciences, and my host and his wife. By the way, how do you like this? The day that we went, I learned that the hostess had no idea who was coming for dinner. Imagine being the hostess with the mostess and being told, honey, Dr. Greer, who's an expert on extraterrestrial intelligence, and the director of central intelligence is coming for dinner tonight. He wouldn't tell her until an hour or so before we arrived. But when this meeting began, I spent 10 minutes on the evidence. The CIA director stopped me and said, I know these things are real, but I want to know why, as Mr. Hellyer said, I don't know about it. What are the implications of this secrecy? Who is keeping this secret from us? And what is their agenda? That, my fellow denizens of the Earth, are what we spent the next 3 hours discussing. And that is the pressing issue of our time. Because while many people think this issue is about little green men, on the contrary, it's about the future of this planet and who will set the agenda for this planet. And will it be the people of the Earth and their representatives, or will it be a kleptocracy who have stolen from us 50 years of our history, where we now face ourselves in war after war in the Middle East over oil, where we see both polar ice caps melting, where we have a clandestine operation which has already placed very powerful weapon systems in space which are tracking and targeting completely non-hostile extraterrestrial vehicles. This is of the utmost importance. Shortly after this meeting with the CIA director, a good friend of the president's came to my home. And he said, you know, the president's very supportive of having this information come out, but he isn't going to do what you've asked. And I had asked the CIA director and the president, through his national security advisor and some other folks working with him, to do the disclosure project as an official executive order. And this man sat, and you know, it's stunning to think about, excuse me, at my dining room table with my wife and children, and said, well, he's very supportive of this, but we're convinced that if the president does what you're recommending, he will end up like Jack Kennedy. Which time I burst out laughing, I went, you know, I felt the man was, of course, joking. He stopped me and said, no, we are not joking. President Clinton did not want to pursue this. I have subsequently met, and this is a partial list I will share with you, ranking members of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Richard Bryan, who was on that committee from the state of Nevada, where Nellis Air Force Base is located. I have personally briefed the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the head of intelligence for the Joint Chief of Staff, and also the Secretary General of the United Nations and his family, Boutros-Ghali, amongst others. What I found was that the vast majority of people that we think are running our governments are being lied to or denied access. And this permanent, if you will, government, as opposed to the provisional one, I like that analogy, is the one running the show. We have neither elected them nor appointed them. The problem with that, as Eisenhower warned in his last address to the nation in 1961, as he was leaving office, when he said, beware the military-industrial complex because it will get out of control and be a threat to our security and to our democracy. Why did a five-star, two-term conservative Republican president say this? Because, as his attorney that you just heard has said, he knew that there had already been a complete, silent coup d'etat of the organs of the military, intelligence, and financial systems. This is a serious problem, and it's time for both the public and the media to take it very seriously. The issue cannot be overstated in terms of what its implications are. Imagine if this subject can be properly disclosed in Canada. This is my great hope to the North. I've almost despaired of the United States. I say this as a patriotic American whose mother's family were some of the original founders of the United States. And I look to Canada and I look to some other countries and say, perhaps you can reach your elected officials and ask them, and there's a petition for you to sign for this to happen, to hold open, secrecy-free hearings, and I will give whoever is the investigator for whatever Senate or Parliament committee who inquires into this matter the list, name, phone numbers, all the information of all 450 of these military and intelligence witnesses. We have, in many senses, reached a crossroads in our civilization. We have reached a point where we will have to close one chapter in the human experience. It is trouble with them. We must leave the rampages of adolescence behind and become a mature civilization, living together in peace on this planet and going out in space together in peace. There is only one future that is possible, and it is a future of peace and of disclosure and of truth. Without it, we will not be able to make this transition across this great divide between our dreams and the reality of a civilization which is reaching terminus. Make no mistake about it, as I flew up to Montreal to give a lecture up in Montreal this past weekend, fate put me beside the head of sustainability and the environment for a company you have here called Alcan. I guess you've heard of it. I wasn't familiar, but it's a $20 billion company, big aluminum company. And we started talking about this. He says, you know, nothing we're doing is sustainable. It takes gigawatts of power for us to get aluminum, for us to make beverage cans, out of the ore. And we're burning fossil fuels and we're using all kinds of resources to do it. I said, yes, isn't that a shame? Because Ben Rich, the head of Lockheed Skunk Works, before he passed away, told three members of the Disclosure Project team that we already had the means to generate infinite amounts of energy, to travel among the stars at superluminal velocities, but that these technologies were locked away in a black box, and that it would take an act of God to get them out to the public, I'm quoting. I think it's time that perhaps maybe God works through us. It's time for us to say, all right, if our leaders will not do it, let the people lead the leaders, and they'll follow. Perhaps it is time. To allow ourselves to reach the potential of the future of humanity and lead to our children and our grandchildren and all those that come behind us a sustainable civilization living in peace, and that will be the generation to achieve that seminal hallmark in human evolution. Thank you.
We are now at 10 minutes to 9. We began at 7 o'clock. I wanted this to go no more than an hour and a half to 2. However, I think there are some people who may want to ask questions, and I just want to provide the opportunity for anyone who wants to, first of all, from the press, who wants to direct questions at either Mr. Hellyer, or Dr. Greer, or myself or Michael. So that microphone will be live in a minute if you wish to. Is there anyone who wishes to come forward to? Okay.
I'll just ask this generally. I think there's two things that became abundantly clear this evening. But my ears are popping. And they are... First of all, I think you present an extremely credible case that we are not alone. I think 1,000 people are supporting you, at least on that DVD, it was 400, it must be. I personally, as an educated, you know, fairly engaged person, have no argument with that. I think it's more small-minded to think we are alone. Secondly, the point has been raised again and again that we are still struggling with the reality of our planet being populated by BS bastards and bozos in all the wrong places, and that's a problem I don't think we can fix tonight. It's been with us for 1,000 years, just like the ETs, and we're just going to have to work with it. My question to you people who are so passionate about the presence and the possibilities of the ET reality is, and I'm speaking here as a journalist, how can I have a close encounter with these people or these beings? And do you, if you're so convinced of the presence as I am, there's got to be an impetus to communicate with them. However that can be managed, perhaps they don't have a language like we do. What are you doing to foster an interaction? Because I think that the real excitement of the planet would be engaged if there was also an ET at the front desk here that we could relate to. And just seeing all these talking heads again and again, it's driving me crazy. I mean, I just want to get on the plane or the spaceship and go there, and I don't know how to do that. And I feel obligated as a journalist to make that effort. Can you help me get to the other side?
It's a very good question. I want to make a comment. The original project was a disclosure project, the parent organization, CSETI, the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And it started as a project to go out to areas where these objects were being reported and using various types of telemetry and reconnaissance to contact them. And we made that happen, and it did happen. This is how we first got on the radar screen of the head of Army Intelligence and the CIA director and people like that. I've only touched 0.001% of what we're dealing with tonight. So it's a very good question, and it can be done. I encourage you to go to disclosureproject.org and look into that. The other point I'd like to make is that we have confirmation. I'm not going to give the name yet because we're trying to coax this guy out of the closet. But one of the senior-most people in the SETI project, which is the Carl Sagan Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence effort, has confirmed to the Disclosure Project, this is one of the senior-most people, that they have received multiple extraterrestrial signals, communicative signals, but that now they are getting external human, probably NRO, National Reconnaissance Officer, or NSA, jamming of those signals, and they're getting very frustrated. The question is, why hasn't the SETI project, funded by Paul Allen, who's the co-founder of Microsoft, come forward with this information? I'm a little uncomfortable even mentioning this, except for the fact that the public needs to know that this effort, which has received a great deal of mainstream media attention, has actually confirmed to us from two inside sources that they have received extraterrestrial signals and have confirmed them as being extraterrestrial, and that they have become increasing in frequency and number. So you can make this sort of effort. I would say that, it's sort of a wrap-up of this, a few years ago I was meeting with Senator Claiborne Pell, who sort of epitomized at least in the Blessed Legion in the United States Senate. And he wanted me to brief his staff on this issue. He said, you know, and at the time he was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And a very nice, cute little story here. I was with him out in California doing a briefing for the Board of Noetic Sciences, which is astronaut Dick Mitchell's group. And he was there and wanting to get some information on this matter. And we went out on the patio under the stars. And I said, you know, we have needed people for at least 50 or 60 years since we entered the space age to be ambassadors from Earth to these people. And you, as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, have been deprived of dealing with the ultimate foreign relations issue. And with that, I pointed to the stars above our head. And he looked at me through his horn-rimmed glasses and blinked, and he said, well, Dr. Curry, I'm afraid you may be right. I do what I am. And he said, well, what can we do? So here's what we can do. If we have to get our officials to not only disclose the information, but we urgently need something as a counterbalance to the military response to this phenomenon that is diplomatic, ambassadorial, peaceful, and progressive looking. This is not happening. In that vacuum has stepped a military junta that has militarized the issue. It is a very dangerous thing. Now, we the people can change that. And the CSETI project, the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, CSETI.org, have expeditions where we're training people to do this. And we have been doing this sort of attempted contact and developing protocols and a framework for contact for a long time. And I think it's a very good question, because you have to go beyond a phenomenological analysis of this and say, well, look, if these are indeed intelligent life forms visiting this planet, there's this deafening silence from the human dimension, except the military response. And I think it is time for us to have a more progressive and enlightened human response to the present.
Yes, thank you. Before I ask questions, I just want to reiterate that we do have copies here of a petition that you can send to all of the leaders of the Canadian Parliament, if you wish. I have copies of it here available as a hard copy, and you can also go to Alfred Weber's website, exopolitics.com, and you can also download it from there and send it to your member of Parliament. Okay? It speaks to exactly the issue that...
I'd just like to add one thing to what Dr. Greer said. I've been on one of these CSETI expeditions, and I'd encourage anyone who has an interest to go to the website and look it up and maybe consider participating, because it's really a remarkable experience. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay, microphone.
Well, yes, my name is Donald Wilson. I've watched this for more than 50 years, and I'm not the least bit surprised. Most of what you said, I already know. And one of the few folks who have read the book by Jonathan Eisen, Suppressed Inventions, he goes through this whole thing that the gentleman has been talking about in very great detail. He also talks about renewable energy. Francesco Petchin made an ability to turn water into hydrogen at will, so you don't have to have a tank on it. It's a patent in the United States. It's been made available, and nobody has picked it up. I've been watching this from 48. I remember when Dr. Major John Kehoe said, flying saucers are real, and I have my own theory of gravity and magnetism, in which I state that the gravity is not a suction, but a pressure coming from the stars. So I have a copy here if one of the guys would like it, and I'm really interested tonight, and I'm pleased that this has come forward.